Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
Afrodita!
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. Did you know we have over 9 million downloads of this show? It's amazing. I can't believe it. I thought I was talking to myself, but I guess the numbers say otherwise. I appreciate that. Thanks so much. If you haven't rated the show, consider doing that. It helps not just for us, for all the shows that you like. If you think they've earned 5 stars, give it to them as we fight the algorithm battles. We can't do this show without our sponsors' support. Therefore, I got to get you good sponsors, ones that make sense for you. Have you checked out Christian Yordanov's Live Longer Formula yet? You should. Go to livelongerformula.com. If you're somebody that is experiencing, I don't know, digestive problems, or you're having a hard time sleeping, or you've got low energy, this is right in Christian's wheelhouse. Go talk to him. Go see if he can start the process of reclaiming your vitality, right? Get your health back on track in 2025. What the theory I heard before that I thought it was pretty apropos was, you know, healthy people have 1,000 dreams. Sick people only have one. If you're sick right now, you'd trade anything to feel better. It's fixable. In most cases, it's just something going on inside your body that your doctor isn't going to find. I ditched those doctors a long time ago. Christian is my certified health practitioner. Maybe he would be yours as well. Best thing to do, go to livelongerformula.com and check it out. See what you think. You know, if you're having problems with brain fog, that's a real thing. And this affects a lot of people. So stop being reactive with your medicines and start being proactive. Take control of your health. Get on board with this. Don't wait and wait till the end of the year or till you feel worse. You want to tackle this problem right now. Get a look and see what's going on under the hood, and make sure that you and Christian get together and create a customized plan that's specific just for you. Go to livelongerformula.com. Check it out. See what you think. Also, Legal Shield has been in business for the last half a century in the United States and Canada, and they'll get you access to an attorney right around the corner from you for $1 a day. $30 a month is the cost. It's the best money you'll ever spend, especially if you need things like legal documents created right off the bat. Last will and testament, do it immediately. Medical directive, you don't want to wind up in a hospital without one of those, because then they start making decisions on your behalf. And we saw how bad that was with COVID. You don't want to have the power for them. Financial, power of attorney, things like that. Listen, if you're incapacitated in any way, life still goes on, and you need to make sure that you're being taken care of by your family. So get these documents done. If you don't have them already, that's cool. You can take care of this real quick. Go to don'tgetpushedaround.com. You'll find everything that you need to know about Legal Shield. You can find all the a la carte items that you can add to your program, including ID Shield, small business plan. If you run a small business, if you carry a gun, they have documentation for that as well. There's a lot going on over there. And you'll get an app on your phone. It's real easy. You just touch a couple buttons and you can contact the law firm closest to you and tell them exactly what you need. Get that set up. Do it in the first month, man. Get your money's worth. You know, do that right off the bat. Then it's going to open up the doors. You're going to feel like, okay, I know how to do it. I feel comfortable doing this. In the future, if your job wants you to sign some new employment contract that has some questionable language about, I don't know, you agree to some medical procedures, i.e. vaccines or whatnot, during the next pandemic, man, don't sign any of that. Don't sign it. Don't sign it till you send it to your attorney and have them take a look at it. So that's what it's there for. If you're interested, go to don'tgetpushedaround.com and check it out and see if it's right for you. Well, I'll tell you, I've been wanting to do a show on the creation of the Federal Reserve for a while. You know, it's tough to do it because as long as the book The Creature from Jekyll Island exists, I'd just send everybody over there. You know, G. Edward Griffin wrote that transformational book. I mean, I think a lot of people now understand that the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor has any reserves because of his book. And so I fully encourage people to take the deep dive with his book and get to the bottom of it. We're going to do a little bit about it. We're going to talk about some of the figures that were involved in it. And we're going to talk about Woodrow Wilson, who, in my opinion, was the worst president in the history of the United States. I know that is a debatable topic with people like Lincoln and, I don't know. I mean, George H.W. Bush, for my money, was the worst human being who was president. But some of the decisions that Woodrow Wilson made slit the throat of the American people, essentially. And so we want to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Money Trust. This is a group of bankers that were behind the formation of the Federal Reserve. We're going to talk a little bit more about and we'll wrap up with banker wars. You know, we'll talk about how these bankers wind up being the most dangerous tentacle. When I wrote The Octopus of Global Control, of the eight tentacles that we've got there, I mean, I think it's tempting to say that the military is the most dangerous. And of course, in some regards, it is, because they're the ones that are doing the fighting. But the wars don't kick off at all without the banks. And so I think the banking tentacle is the most dangerous, in my opinion. It, the use of money, the access to money and the lack of access to it really sets the tone for how your country is going to run. And the central banks have infiltrated just about every country on earth, and they are a stain on humanity. I've had people ask me, obviously it's a hypothetical, if you could become president, not that I would ever want that job, but should you become president, what would be the first thing that you would do, or what would be the one thing that you would do that would have the biggest impact? I would take every single person who works at the Federal Reserve, march them out into the courtyard after fair trial, of course, and have them executed for their crimes against humanity. The bankers are the most dangerous people on the planet. You're going to understand when we get done with this episode what they did to America set this country back a century. I mean, from the time that the Federal Reserve was instituted, the clock started ticking on the value of our money, and it has been whittled away by 98% in over a century. But I think those days are coming to an end. I hope they are. I want to talk about a guy who doesn't get the credit he deserves for destroying the United States from within, and you probably have never even heard his name, but I'm talking about Colonel Edward Mandelhouse. This is not a name that gets thrown around a lot, and that actually should be your first indicator that he's pretty important, because he was a deep operator in banking, politics, and international affairs. He was born in 1858. He died in 1938 at the age of 79, 1 year before World War II. Don't worry, that way he would have loved World War II. He was deeply involved in the creation of World War I through the banking component of this. So he's Woodrow Wilson's right-hand man, and I think it's fair to say his handler. He never held a political office. He was so close with Woodrow Wilson, in fact, that Colonel Mandelhouse lived in the White House, and which is a weird thing to do, especially when you have no declared role, no official role in the government. He was not his chief of staff. He wasn't. He's a handler, and he was there. Well, look, let's be honest. He was in the White House. And the reason why Mandelhouse was there was because Woodrow Wilson was there. And the only reason why Woodrow Wilson was in the White House was because of Mandelhouse. So he got him elected. And part of the package deal is that, you know, whether this was Woodrow Wilson's idea, whether he was amenable to this or not, this guy was sent in there to keep control of him. Woodrow Wilson had one job and one job only. That was to get in there and start the Federal Reserve. Okay. And once you do that, it starts the process of where we are today. I'd say if he had a secondary job, it would be once you get the Federal Reserve up and running, then we immediately need to start a world war. And of course, Woodrow Wilson was the president who got America into World War One. So he was sent there. He was sent there essentially to make sure that their plan was put into place in 1913, which of course it was. So who had the plan? Who was behind all of this? Well, there's a group called the Money Trust, and we've talked about them before. It's a group of bankers And for the last 20 years of the 1800s, and for the first, let's say, 40 years of the 1900s, the group running finance in the United States was the Money Trust. And they're a New York City-based banking cabal. They ran the Pilgrim Society, which started in 1902. Big, you know, group of these guys, WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. It's sort of like Northeastern banking elite. And Money Trust was involved in Skull and Bones at Yale. You know, it's that group. These are the white devils. These are the real white devils, you know, not the imaginary one that the left's always fantasizing about. But these people were diabolical. And they were, the group is comprised of Edward Mandelhaus as one of them. J.P. Morgan was part of this group. Jacob Schiff, William Rockefeller, Felix and Paul Warburg, and Nelson Aldrich. And what they did is that, you know, bankers always love to create these boom and bust cycles. They make a lot of money during them, so when you know that you've got the game rigged, and then you control the media, you can make it seem like there's a big catastrophe coming so that the general public either all sells their stock or all buys their stock or whatever they do. But this is a head fake, of course, because the people who are behind this create the bankers, they create the panics, and then they profit from them. And this was what happened in 1907. It was called the 1907 Panic, where they had advance notice of a banking catastrophe that was coming because they created it. And what happened is that in the aftermath of this, they did what always happens, is they shake out all the weak hands and they consolidate power into a tighter group of people. So it bankrupted rivals, those that weren't part of the Money Trust. They weren't privy to the game that was being played, the scam that was being set up. And so it caught a lot of them off guard. You know, it's like playing a rigged game of poker. You know, you don't know if everyone at the table's cheating and you're the guy who isn't cheating, you don't know that you're walking into a trap here. And these guys they're diabolical, of course. And they set this up, this rigged game. And in 1907, they did, kind of like, you know, like what Rothschilds did with the Napoleonic Wars too. Like they leak information that it's going one way. The general public acts like a herd and all dumps their stock or whatever. And then they come in, buy it up for pennies on the dollar. And then, oh, what do you know? Napoleon actually won. And boom, there goes the, Napoleon lost, or whatever. So they sell the stories to the general public one way, and then they're betting on the other side. I mean, this is just like, it's like rigging a basketball game if you're the mafia, you know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden, you know, you got information that that your star player knocked up his girlfriend, right? And his head's not going to be in the game, and so you bet the other way. So this has been going on for a long, long time. There's nothing really new to this. But what this group did, this group, the Money Trust, they met, they got together, and decided that they would formulate a plan to really officially take control of the American finance industry. Case can be made that they had control of it beforehand, but not in the way that they did in the aftermath of it. So they decided to take a secret trip to a small island off the coast of Georgia called Jekyll Island. And that, of course, is where you get the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. So this this banking cabal goes to Georgia, and the criminals from the Money Trust went on a very secret mission. So secret that they all left individually on these trains and left from like different stations so that nobody would, I just imagine that if you're a high level banker like this, that the media is watching you, right? That they're trying to figure out, or your rivals are watching you as well. And if they see you meeting with a certain person, maybe they make some sort of inferences that, oh, maybe you guys are doing a deal together. We need to get... So it behooves these guys to not talk about what they're doing and to not, you know, I mean, these days it'd be like, don't all get on the same private jet and go to Epstein, right? You go single file, right? You go separately and you kind of hide your tracks a little bit. And so that's what they did. When they got to Jekyll Island, they were only referred to by their first name. Obviously, the last name of some of these people were going to set off, you know, red flags with the help. I mean, you either keep it real quiet or you have to kill all the maids after you're done with the meeting. And not that they wouldn't do that, but they didn't in this particular case. So what they wanted to do was plot on how to privatize the U.S. money system for their own benefit and for their control. And so what they did is six members took the trip, late night trains, super secret, and got to Georgia and stayed there for about a week on this island out of the, out of the glare of the New York City media, where they were either coming from, most of them were coming from New York. Some of them were coming from Washington, D.C., but you can't have the press talking about this secret meeting that you're having. So they slipped off, got together, had the meeting, and then did the same thing on their way back. So who was there at the meeting? The names, you might recognize some of them, but for the most part, these names aren't exactly common knowledge these days. Paul Warburg was there. You probably know who he is. He was a German banker, brother of Max Warburg. This guy was a partner of Kuhn Loeb and Company, which is a bank. He was the head of the German intelligence agency. And he was sent there really at the behest of the Rothschilds. He was representing his brothers. He was representing his family, the Warburg family, but also the Rothschilds. He was their person for that. You've got Nelson Aldrich, who is there. He's the leader of the Republican Party in the Senate. He was a Republican from Rhode Island. He was a member of the Pilgrim Society. All these guys are members of the Pilgrim Society, by the way. So he was their politician that they had in their pocket, and he needed to come down there so that they could explain to him what the game was. And so that when he goes back, he's obviously not going to mention that he just had a really in-depth week-long meeting with the most powerful bankers in the world, and he's going to keep that to himself. But they're going to need to sell him on the idea, but they're going to have to explain to him how he's going to sell Congress on the idea of this. And it's going to be a tough one, but they had a plan, and he was part of their plan. Henry Davidson is on this list. He represented J.P. Morgan, Bankers Trust, Astor Place Bank, and the Red Cross. So he's a guy who most people don't know the name, but he was representing the Morgans in this relationship. It's another thing. It's kind of hard to have, like, you can't have Mr. Rockefeller and Mr. Rothschild and Mr. Morgan all leaving at the same time and winding up at this place. So what they did, they set their trusted representatives who were going to work out the details for them for the banks that they controlled. Charles Norton is on the list. He's he was from the Taft administration. He was a banker, of course, president of First National Bank, New York City. He was a president of the Merchants Club. So he was a guy that was a New York banker who most people at that time had an idea. This is 1910, by the way, when they're doing this. So we're talking about 115 years ago, long time ago. But one thing that didn't change is that the banks still run the world. Frank Vanderlip was on the list. He's the president of National City Bank, otherwise known as Citibank. He's a New Yorker, partner of William Rockefeller. He was sent there as the Rockefeller representative to make sure that their interests were upheld here. And lastly on the list was a guy named Benjamin Strong. He was the head of J.P. Morgan's Bankers Trust. He was a member of the Money Trust. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a member of Bohemian Grove. I mean, I think they all fit that category of guys who look like they'd be partying at Bohemian Grove. And this is no exception here. So these guys use the week plus, I think it was about 10 days all in terms of travel and while they were there, to explain to Nelson Aldridge what he was going to tell Congress. So how he was going to sell it, and most importantly, how he was going to sell it without mentioning that they had all talked. Because if the word got out that he was hanging out with bankers, then they would know you can't be the representative of us because it's clearly you're not talking for yourself. It looks like you're speaking on behalf of these bankers. Not to say that the rest of Congress wasn't also compromised by bankers as well, but I think they knew about his relationship with the Money Trust, and so people were a bit skeptical anyway. So this was the meeting that they had where they got it all worked out. And by the time they left, they felt pretty comfortable. You know, they felt like we'll have Aldrich take this to Congress and we'll just get it passed. It'll be no big deal. What wound up happening though, actually, is that it didn't. There was pushback on it almost immediately from this. There are a lot of people who are saying, no, we don't need this. We don't like this. This is not going to work. The Aldrich plan was what it was called. The Aldrich plan had a lot of people that were pushing back against it. And rightly so, of course, but I'm always a bit surprised to see that anybody pushed back against it. I sort of assume that the bankers own all of them. I don't know why there'd be some that sort of weren't under their control, but this was it. This was the concept of a private central bank that their partners, you know, created by the Money Trust and benefiting them, and certainly not in any way, shape, or form helping out the American people. What they wanted to do, it's an audacious plan and one that eventually wound up working, is that it's like, let us be in charge of the money system. And what we'll do is we'll print the money, we'll create the money, and then we'll loan it to the Treasury, the United States Treasury, and then you borrow from us, and then you pay us interest. Now, the logical question is, aren't we the Treasury? What do we need you for? Can't we just do this? Can't we just print this up? And they say, yeah, but we're bankers. I mean, you don't want to get into all the banking stuff, right? All the nitty-gritty of that. And they're like, well, we're the fucking Treasury. I mean, if anyone's qualified, it would be us. Well, that's logic, okay? And that's sanity to think that a private bank does not need to insert itself in the middle of this government when the government can simply print the money itself and create it and not have to borrow it. So it just goes to show you how deeply controlled these people are, that the most logical and simple concept, which is let's just have the Treasury do this and not pay the interest on the debt, that was not even really, that was an idea that they painted as preposterous somehow. And eventually they got their way in 1913. When they introduced this in 1910, bankers loved it, but many of the politicians didn't, including actually treasonous scumbag Woodrow Wilson. He came out against it publicly. Keyword is publicly. Publicly came out against it. But there's a lot of people that we see in today's, you know, Congress who come out publicly against something only to privately be supporting it and are used as controlled opposition. And Woodrow Wilson was one of those guys. He wound up passing this in 1913, thus sealing the fate of America for the bankers. I want to As I mentioned, Mandelhaus was his handler. And there's letters that he sent to Wilson back and forth that wound up in, I guess, Woodrow Wilson's, I want to say his diary or some of his records. And they're so bananas that I've got to read them word for word, because you're never going to, you're just never going to believe it if I don't read it word for word. So, this was, okay. So it's long, but hang in there with me. So he says, somewhere between 1913 and 1921, Colonel Mandelhaus wrote these comments in his journal. He said, the president, okay, so this is Mandelhaus's journal. The president is to perpetuate the slavery of Americans. By design, we have been kept bankrupt and insolvent by an ancient evil system of pledging. Central bankers have been profiting at our expense for over 70 years. This is one of the comments he put. So he said, very soon, every American will be required to register their biological property, meaning your children, in a national system designed to keep track of the people. And that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer not being able to work and earn a living. They will be our chattel, meaning property, and we will hold the security interests over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of laden, meaning birth certificate, to us, will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent, secured by their pledges. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designated to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser for not one man in a million could ever figure our plans. If by accident one or two should figure out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debts to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. This will inevitably reap us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor to this fraud, which we will call social insurance, aka Social Security. Without realizing it, every American will unknowingly be our servant, however begrudgingly. The people will become helpless and without any hope for their redemption, and we will employ the highest office, meaning the presidency, of our dummy corporation, United States, to foment this plot against America. That is Colonel Edward Mandelhaus. Okay, so they are talking about using birth certificates as ownership of, and they're talking about the United States as a corporation, not the United States of America like the country, but the corporation of the United States. The birth certificates, that's why your birth certificate is written in all capital letters, because you are a corporation. It's corporate, more or less. And I am unqualified, and I'm not going to be able to go into the depths of this, because it's too technical, and I couldn't do it right anyway. So there's a lot more to this story than just that. But if you think about it, the idea that they create the banking system. So in 1913, the Federal Reserve Act passes, and it's H.R. 7873. Federal Reserve Act, signed by Woodrow Wilson, created a de facto central bank owned in part by foreign interests, meaning like the Rothschilds and Warburgs, plus the WASP, banking royalty like Rockefellers and Morgans. And what they've done is they privately own the bank and can issue banknotes at their discretion. This was something called the National Reserve Association, later became the Federal Reserve Act. And they launched the Federal Reserve private bank that can loan money to the Treasury at interest, which they collect, which is the national debt that everybody talks about, how it's so out of control. And then simultaneously, they created the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, as the collection arm of this. So what they said was, we'll create this funny money by the Federal Reserve. We'll loan it into existence. We'll charge interest on it. And then the government, you're going to owe us the money. And the government said, well, we don't want to owe you the money. What we'll do is we'll make the people owe you the money. So what we'll do is we'll start the process of taxation. We'll start taxing them for it. Start small at first, right? It's always like, we're only going to tax the millionaires. And everyone goes, yay, good, tax those millionaires. And then it's like, well, you know, now we're going to tax everybody, but it's only going to be a little amount. And then it's a little bit more, and then it's a little bit more. And now then you get to where we are today. So we see how this process works. The government said, well, what we'll do is we'll set up the collection arm to get the taxes from these people, and we'll use that to pay back the interest on the money that you guys are creating. So it's a nice little scam. The government gets money loaned to them. They basically can just ask for whatever they want and get as much money as they want. And any of the debt associated, any of the interest associated with it, well, they just have you and me pay for that. And that's terrible, of course, but it works at a low level. Once you get to $35 trillion, I mean, nobody's paying that back. And but this is part of the plan. And they broke up the Federal Reserve into 12 districts. Federal Reserve Board of Governors in each district. It had to do with the legislation. When they passed it, there were compromises that had to be made, because again, in 1913, they were still like, we don't love this. Like a lot of the Congress was like, we don't love it, but we recognize that we need some sort of banking help here. And you know, we just had that big panic in 1907 that we all remember. And they're like, yeah, you know, you don't want to have another one of those panics, wink, wink, almost like a threat. And so what we, the bankers, need to do is we'll be in charge of it, and then we'll bring stability to the banking system so that you don't have these big booms and busts. Well, yeah, little did they know, they were just on the cusp of creating one of the, you know, larger boom and bust cycles because of the central banks. And that, of course, is not accidental either. So they basically loan money into existence through the U.S. Treasury, which pays them interest through collecting money from the IRS for the privilege of printing money out of literal thin air, since now it's all digital. And that's the system that we currently have right now. It's probably going to go away at some point, not fast enough, but the idea of central banks are really, they're so dangerous. Because the Federal Reserve is intentionally named such to provide cover, to make the general public think that it is a federal branch of the government. It is not. And you will meet almost every person in your life will want to argue with you about this because they don't know any better. They've never looked into it. They don't understand the scam. But this is the case. It is a private bank owned by a consortium of other private banks. And so the United States' money, the dollar, the Federal Reserve note, is, if you want to think about it, is created and conceived from a bank that is part owned by the Rothschilds and Rockefellers and Morgans. You know, so it's not for the people, by the people. It's for the bankers, by the bankers, and not only are they bankers, but most of them are Europeans. So Europe has a say in, you know, we might have gotten away from the British a couple hundred years ago, but not from the bankers. The bankers still have their claws in us. And, you know, they have loaned the government $35 trillion that we know about. We know that there's a whole lot more that's gone, been squirreled away elsewhere. But this is the epitome of a Ponzi scheme. It takes fresh money in order to keep it going, to replace the people that need their money out of the system. You've always got to have more suckers at the game. And of course, we're a nation of suckers, and it's highly leveraged. It's a rigged system. It benefits a small group of insiders and destroys the livelihood of everybody else. If you wonder why your grandfather has the stories of back in my day, we used to go to a movie for a nickel. Well, yeah, this is why, because of the interest and the debt associated with this, and the inflation of the currency, the inflation of the money supply. It's not, at its core, it's not all that difficult to understand. If there's more dollars chasing the same number of goods, then it's going to require more dollars for each unit of, for each good. It's a very simple calculation. But the problem is, we don't even know how much money's in existence anymore. I mean, there's number. I mean, they think they do. I mean, they tell you that they do. But the truth is, the Federal Reserve's never been audited. So you're just going to have to take their word for it. It's like when the Fort Knox says, "Oh, we got all this gold in the basement." And you go, "Okay, well, when was the last time you guys did an audit on that?" They're like, "Well, you know, like 70 years ago." You're like, so. So what, we're just supposed to take your word for it? The gold is still there? Oh yeah, it's still there. Have you seen it? No, it's really locked up. Okay. Ask the UK is having a problem with this right now. There's a lot of banks that are asking for their gold, and the UK is like, "Well, you know, it's going to take like maybe 6 to 8 weeks for us to get around to that." You know, there's some it's in that big vault, and then we've got things in front of it that are kind of blocking it. So maybe we need to, like, you know, it's just going to take a while. You're like, that sounds like somebody who's like, who isn't going to pay up on their gambling debt to me. That sounds like a guy who's just getting ready to split town. Let's talk about Woodrow Wilson. He was a tremendous piece of shit. And a treasonous piece of shit too. So a double whammy. He sold our country out to the money trust banking cabal. But in his defense, and I'm not going to put up much of a defense for him, but in his defense, he was fully controlled by them. Okay. There was no other choice for him. He ran, you know, when he ran for president in 1912, he was financed by these guys. His public policy was, "I'm against these guys. I'm against these bankers. These bankers are terrible," while simultaneously taking almost all his money from the bankers. And they said, "We got one thing for you, man. When you get in there, you're gonna sign this Aldrich plan. You're gonna make sure that gets passed, that we create the Federal Reserve. That's what you're gonna do. You're going to do it, or else." And you know, so he talked a good game about opposing their interests, but that's just politician talk. That's just what you do when you're running for president. You get up there and make all these promises. But it's pretty well known that he was a victim of sexual blackmail, and they had an airtight control file on this MF-er, right? He was not going to get off the reservation at all. I mean, Mandelhouse was there literally in the White House, installed in the White House to keep an eye on him, one of his handlers. So he rolled back economic improvements earmarked for the black community. He was not a huge fan of the black community. He got us into World War I, 1 month after taking office. I think that's worth noting. We'll get into that in a little bit here. I want to read a quote from him, man. This also goes into, you know, he's taking money from the Rockefellers banking trust, and the Rockefellers also are working with Carnegie's on compulsory schooling, right? They're creating the public school education system and have been doing that for, oh, I don't know, maybe like 30, 40 years before he got in there. But so they're deeply involved in it. So this is what Woodrow Wilson said, talking about schools. He said, "We want one class of persons to have a liberal education, and we want another class of persons, a very much larger class of necessity in every society, to forego the privileges of a liberal education and to fit themselves to perform specific, difficult, manual tasks. One kind of education for the rich, and then the poors can dig ditches for the rest of their life." Quoting the great Judge Schmales in Caddyshack, "The world needs ditch diggers too, I suppose." Woodrow Wilson later went on to say, "I quote, I have unwittingly ruined my country." What a piece of shit. Not wittingly. Clapper. You know what I mean? Reminds me of the James Clapper thing. Not wittingly. Oh, yeah, it's wittingly. Yeah, you did it on purpose. You know, this is what these guys are installed to do. So I know people wonder why I'm so up in arms about politicians. This is why. You can have the idea, like the Rockefellers have, about compulsory schooling and how they want to reimagine it. But it only goes so far until you get in your hooks in the political system. And when you get a guy like Woodrow Wilson, a soulless psychopath who was sent there to destroy this country, he did it with the education, you know, with this sort of philosophy towards education, completely bifurcated the American public into the educated and the uneducated. And they made that, you know, and then there's stratification within the uneducated class as well, especially if you happen to be black. I mean, like I said, he rolled back economic improvements that were earmarked for them. He just said, "We're not doing that. We're not helping the black people out. We're not doing that." Again, like, you know, this is a time, you know, during, they were still, oh God, I don't know, 40 years away from desegregation at this point. So it was a much different world, and Woodrow Wilson, his role in destroying it is sort of legendary. If you want to read a great article on the similarities between Woodrow Wilson and Donald Trump, I'm going to point you to Activist Post and an article by Nina Payne. Go look it up. You spell her name NeeNahPayne. And Nina Payne has been writing for Activist Post for a very long time, 700 plus articles that she's written. Find the one where she's comparing Wilson to Trump. I'm not going to give it away because I want you to go in there and read it because it's worth reading. But where the World War I part should get your attention, right? And this is where the similarities with Trump make me very uncomfortable, is that Wilson was sent in, get the central bank started immediately, which he did, like right off the bat. And then we got to get, you know, and then we got to get into war. And wars do a lot of damage on the battlefield, of course, but they make the bankers staggering amounts of money. It's the most profitable component of banking that they could have, right? You could loan money to people if they want to buy a house, but why, when you could just loan it to governments and then the governments will have to go into additional debt to pay you back, or maybe they pay you back in other ways that include giving you powers or removing power from your enemies or whatever. There's a lot of ways in which you can get paid back. Not everybody pays back the loan shark with cash that they owe him. Sometimes they do favors for him as well. And that you can be put in a position, John Perkins talks about this in Confessions of an Economic Hitman, where countries would fall behind in their debts to the IMF and World Bank. And you know, when you're the IMF and the World Bank, you, like, money is just a tool for control. I mean, what are you going to do? Go make me more money so you can give it back to me. Man, I got all the money I need. I've got the magic printing press. I can just fire that thing up. What I really want isn't actually money. What I really want when you fall behind is I want you to have to give me tangible things. I want you to privatize your lumber industry or sell me your fishing industry or put a UN or, you know, put a vote our way in a UN resolution or put a US military base in your country that doesn't want one, but you don't have a choice because now you kind of have to. So this is the debt trap that they seek to put these people in. It's not even so much that they want their money back, because the money is just symbolic and the money is fiat. It's by decree. What they really want is control. And they want things that don't have price tags on them. You know, they want access to the school systems. They want to control education. They want access to the media. They want access to the military. They want access to you know, they want their corporations to, you know, their Chiquita banana empire to not have any sort of competition. So, you know, a lot of these guys were in the oil business as well. Hey, listen, I want you to approve drilling for my company, but not my competitor's company. Whatever it is, use your imagination. That's how they view this. This is how you get real control. You loan, you create fake ass money out of thin air. Nowadays, it's really thin air. It's just numbers on a computer screen. And then loan it to the government, loan it into existence and give it to the government. It's like, think of like, if you could like go and create your own shit coin, like your own cryptocurrency with your face on it, and then convince the government that it's the best one out there. It's the only one that they can use. And then you say, I'll give it to you, but you gotta buy it from me at interest. And then you go, shit, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to give me more of these coins back as interest? I don't even need any of these coins. I can push the button and make more coins at will. I don't need that. So I'm not even interested necessarily in you paying me back what you owe me plus interest. I want you to pay me back in other ways. And I want you to start a war. I want you to start World War One. Okay, maybe you don't start World War One, but when America is sitting on the sidelines, and I've got and I'm some banker who just created, this concept, I want you to borrow as much money as you can from me to fight this war that you just created at our request, and I want you to go into debt for it. And once the governments are into debt to the bankers, then the bankers can extract tangible relief from them. So my alarm bells go off like crazy when Donald Trump gets elected into office. And I've got plenty of, God knows I've done enough episodes about Biden and Kamala to know that I've got plenty of problems with them. And I'm glad that agenda has gone away. But unfortunately, Donald Trump and his relationship with the with Israel and the current situation that's going on there with Gaza and Israel's 7 countries in 5 years demands and the Greater Israel Project, and they've got a boner to go to war against Iran. Actually, not them to go to war against Iran. They want us to go to war against Iran. I get very nervous because it's got World War One vibes written all over it. And, you know, it doesn't really take much. You might think, well, World War One, you know, I mean, every country was mad at each other and they all got into this fight and they were all fighting it out. No, actually not true. World War One was two pretty obscure countries having a fight with each other. But the problem was that they had security pacts with other countries. So it's like if two guys want to fight and one guy's like, yeah, well, if we get into a fight, you know, like my brother's going to jump in because he's got to. And the other guy's like, oh yeah, well, my cousin's going to jump in. And there's like, oh shit, now there's 4 people in this fight. Well, that cousin has a security relationship with his brother. And if that cousin gets involved, his brother's getting in too. And it's like, oh shit, next thing you know, everyone's involved because everybody's got a relationship. Like, hey, if you get in, we got, you know, it's like NATO Article 5. If you attack one, it's gang code. If you attack one of us, you got to fight all of us. And this is my fear for World War III, is that in World War I, they didn't wait, you know, until Wilson was 3.5 years into his term to start to kick it off. It started in 2 months. They were in war. They were already in. So what is Donald Trump doing? He's talking about, well, we're going to take over Gaza and we're going to reconstitute that. We're going to get involved in there. America's going to have a presence there. And then you see Netanyahu and you see that smug bastard sitting in the White House, Donald Trump pulling his chair out, pushing his chair back for him, gifting him a golden pager, which to me is a threat. I don't know how anybody else can't interpret that any other way than, hey, look at this pager. Be a shame if we sent you a real one. Or, you know, you get the message, right? You get the point. This is what we do to other people. Here, why don't you put this on your mantle as a reminder of who we are and what we do and that there's no line that we won't cross. So why wait 2 years into the next Trump administration when you know you're capped at 4 with him because this is his second time around? If you want World War III, you're going to have to start it immediately. That's one of the main reasons why I get very uncomfortable about the current situation that we're in right now, is because we have to remember that we don't want World War III, but they do. They're not plotting ways to get us out of an extended conflict. They're sitting down trying to role play ideas on how to get us in. Like that Patrick Clausen guy that I quoted in the Octopus book, the Israeli lobbyist guy talking about Iranian submarines. Some, you know, they go down. Sometimes they won't go up. You know, they might not come back up. Who would know? You know, he's talking about, you know, that they need to instigate the war. And they, you know, if war between Iran is going to happen, then we should be in charge of it and make sure it happens sooner than later. You got to read my Octopus book. But there's a quote in there from Patrick Clausen, or you can find the video. He says it on video. You can watch him on video. It's crazy. So, and again, you don't even have to go all the way back to World War I for this scenario. Think about the Bush administration. Think about when they came in. They came in January of 2001. They wrote Rebuilding America's Defenses. The PNAC guys wrote that in September of 2000. And by September of 2001, we had 9/11. So George W. Bush was in office for all of 8 months before 9/11 happened, and then Afghanistan, and then later Iraq. So Afghanistan / opium, and then Iraq / gold. Because it's always about resources. It's always about, it's not just we want to get rid of Saddam Hussein, he's a bad guy. It's once we get rid of Saddam Hussein, what other stuff could we steal? Could we steal his oil? Oh yeah, absolutely. Can we steal the gold? You've seen the pictures of the troops moving, you know, with trucks filled with gold bars in there. Can we steal their antiquities? Can we steal their art? Can we steal all their culture? Can we steal what's not bolted down in Iraq that we can steal? That's what the American Empire was thinking. So we got the sales pitch of, well, you know, I mean, yellow cake uranium, you know, and aluminum tubes, and he may be trying to build a nuclear bomb. All of that stuff was total nonsense. It was all fabricated. It was not any of it was true. So with Trump and his blind allegiance to Israel and Israel's unwavering desire to attack Iran at some point, you have the makings of a World War I situation. You have the makings of a, if only we had a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor under the George W. Bush administration. And here we go with Trump. He would love a false flag attack that would give him the justification to launch a full military strike against Iran, which is exactly what Netanyahu wants him to do and always has. So You know, when you think about that time frame, you know, 2001, 2003 is Afghanistan, 2005 you're in Iraq. That's 4 years. You could start wars on multiple fronts. In his last administration, it is doable from a timing standpoint, especially when you've got such a pro-Israel group of foreign policy people like Pete Hegseth, who's a Christian Zionist who has fantasies about the Knights Templar reconstituting and going back and starting a crusade to wipe out all the Muslims. I mean, pair him with the bloodthirsty Zionists and you've got a really dangerous combination. Both have the common enemy of wanting to get rid of all the Muslims. So it's a dangerous time. Iran should be feeling very uncomfortable right now. I'm sure they are. They don't need me to tell them that. And on top of all of this, you know, wars cover up crimes. And they cover up financial collapses as well. So if you are somebody like I am who believes that there is a financial catastrophe right around the corner, a banking collapse of some kind, and you know it's coming, and it's unstoppable because it's just math and accounting, then the best way to divert attention away from that is to kick off World War III. And then you can bury all of that. And if you win the war, you can rewrite the history books, or you can pivot to a new currency, or you can make a lot of these problems just magically disappear. And I wouldn't put it past Netanyahu to attack Iran, but I would say only if they were certain that the U.S. would get involved. I mean, he's already got a president who is fantasizing about putting casinos and hotels in the Gaza Strip that he's redeveloped. I don't know why thinking that he would want to start a war with Iran would be too much of a stretch. Oh, don't forget about the land, the oil off the coast of Gaza too. I don't know. Are you familiar with that? There's multiple agendas happening all at once. There's the amazing land. Look at this land. It's great. We got to get rid of all these bombs, all these bombed out buildings and all that. But America will foot the bill for that. No problem. God, I can't imagine the sort of blackmail they have on Trump. Though they might not even need it. I think he just sees this as a development play. You know, God as the real estate agent. It's disgusting on so many levels. You know, I think it's important to realize that all wars are banker wars. It's been proven. They make so much money. They get to redraw the lines on the maps in the aftermath. They get to install their central banks if there isn't one already. They get to play both sides of it. They get to make a lot of money and call the shots. And look, I mean, let's not forget also that the most profitable thing for a central bank to do is loan money to a country that's gearing up for a war too. It's not even just so much that the war is happening. It's in the anticipation of it. You know, you've got, oh, well, if we're really going to do this, are we capable of it? Do we need more? What else do we need? We need to buy more missiles, more bullets, more helmets, more this, more that, more planes. So all of that starts cranking up before the war even gets going. So it's just the lead up to war. Now, I think these days with the military industrial complex, the way it is, and almost $1 trillion a year of American budget being spent on that, there is no real ebb and flow. The cycle doesn't really ever relax. It's always time to spend money on the military. But when you know you're about to kick off a substantial war, then you can, as a banker, you can count on that being your cue to get in there and start printing up money like crazy and loaning it out and start that process of playing both sides. You know, what also happens in the lead up to these wars is that you just saddle these countries with so much debt that they're under your control even before the war starts. You know, they owe you so much. So, and you can see this at play with the IMF and the World Bank. This is what Perkins was talking about with Confessions of an Economic Hitman, talking about how they run this scam with they're just loan sharks. They're no better than a typical bookie who hires a loan shark to go, you know, to go collect the money, or some guy with a baseball bat to go get the money that you owe him because your parlay didn't come in last weekend at the with the Cowboys fumbled the kickoff return at the last second, and next thing you know, you owe the mob a bunch of money. So, same scam, just bigger when it comes to the IMF and World Bank. And I get very nervous about this. I encourage you to go read that article that Nina wrote about Wilson and Trump, because there's a lot of similarities here. And I think once people understand that, they'll have a better sense of where things are going. History is rhyming right now. Most people still have their AirPods in. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. Go check out Activist Post and Natural Blaze. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
Years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.